Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform lives.
He is alive and He is in me and in you. Come and see what our great God can do under the sun. Good morning, church, and happy Easter. The Lord is risen. Back in the... Thank you for replying. Yeah, we are no longer just online service. Back in the good old days, when I was still in Chinese primary, you know, when kids still can play Pepsi Cola, that game where we try to break each other's leg, right, because of no SOP, right? One thing that unites all of us in Chinese primary school is this. It is our love for San En Hua Bao. So, it is a periodical, and we love to read this periodical. And we love to read this periodical because it is full of information that is useful. So we are now living in a digital age, and we are constantly bombarded with different information and with all kinds of news. And most of this has no use for us. Surely you must have heard about, you know, the ship being unstuck in the Suez Canal. Hooray! But how useful is that information to you and I? Unless I try to force the application of that news and say something like, the ship is set free, and I believe that God is about to do the same today with some of you to set you free. Otherwise, it is not a news that is that useful to us. And so today, I just want to get right to the point, to talk about news that we can use, news that is actually useful and relevant. Two questions. What is the resurrection and why does it matter? Two questions. What is the resurrection and why does it matter? How is something that happened 2,000 years ago can make a difference in your life today? We will look at the Bible and then we will try to address the question. So the Bible passage for this morning is taken from Matthew chapter 28, verse 1 to 10. So I will be reading from the NIV version. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, he has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and they ran to tell the disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." This is the word of the Lord. So let us first take a look at this question. What is the resurrection? The resurrection is a world-shattering historical event. The resurrection is a world-shattering historical event. In 2017, BBC published an article based on the survey of more than 2,000 participants in Great Britain. The result shows that a quarter of people who describe themselves as Christians, they do not believe in the historical, in the physical resurrection of Jesus. Of course, this did not surprise me. And I don't think it should surprise us as well, because many progressive scholars nowadays, such as John Dominic Crossan, who is quite an influential voice on the research of the historical Jesus, he is from the Jesus Seminar. He says this: the resurrection is only a metaphor. What does that mean? He meant that when the early Christians, they say that Christ is risen, they did not intend to say that Jesus has been raised bodily from the dead. In other words, they are using Jesus' resurrection as a metaphor for his presence and influence, which can be still felt today. It is sort of like people saying his memory lives on. So the resurrection did not happen. The resurrection always happens in our heart. It is a metaphor. And this is what many people believe, including me when I was still a skeptic, that the resurrection is meant to be a metaphor to convey a higher spiritual truth. But if you read through the gospel account of Jesus' resurrection, even at the most basic impressionistic level, you will start to ask, is that what the writers really intended to be? In the scripture reading today, Jesus appeared to the two Marys, and they took hold of his feet and they worshipped him. Jesus appeared to them in a bodily form. And in another resurrection account, in Luke chapter 24, when Jesus appeared to his disciples, he said, "Look at my hands, look at my feet, touch it, feel it, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones." That's what Jesus said. For a spirit does not have flesh and bones. Jesus is not just a ghost. He is not just an impression. You know, usually people, when they depict ghosts, usually ghosts is depicted without feet. If you have trouble thinking about that, think of Casper, the friendly ghost, right? No feet. This has been how, you know, throughout the history, how people illustrate and talk about ghosts. They have no feet. But here, Jesus has resurrected feet. Two feet, which two Marys can cling on to. So the message that Jesus is trying to get across is this: I am not a metaphor. I am really here. I am not just an impression in your mind. I'm not just some kind of spiritual presence. I am here, flesh and bones. Feel me and touch me. And later on, do you remember what Jesus did? He asked his disciples to give him something to eat. It is almost trivial. It is almost silly. Why did the gospel record this? I mean, why did the gospel writer bother to record all of this? Because it really did happen. The truth of Jesus' resurrection is really well supported by many witness accounts. Let me give you a few that I think is worth mentioning. Because every time I mention this, accounts, even the most hardened skeptical persons have to stop and give credence. Matthew chapter 28, it tells us that the initial witnesses to the empty tomb are women, and this has huge historical implications. In the ancient world, women were so marginalized that their testimony was not valid in the court of law. And therefore, think about it. If you are the one who is making up a story, if you are making up a legend about the resurrection of Jesus, you would never put women in there as the first eyewitnesses. It would undermine the credibility of the account, you know, with any of the readers of that time. And so we ask, why did the gospel writer put women as the first eyewitnesses? There is no other motivation other than it really did happen like that. So Richard Bauckham, an Anglican scholar, in his book, Jesus and the Eyewitnesses, he points out that the gospel is filled with individuals' names. He asks, what is the purpose of these names? Why is the gospel writer so careful in recording names? He says that in ancient times, very often when you are giving a historical account based on eyewitnesses' testimony, these were like footnotes. It was like your way of saying that, go and check out what I am telling you. Go and talk to these people. Go and talk to Mary Magdalene. Go and talk to the other Mary, the mother of James and Joseph. Go and talk to them and verify that what I am writing is the truth. But I think what is the most important and amazing thing for me is that upon seeing the risen Christ, the disciples, they immediately worship him. Not just the two women, but the entire gang. If you know anything about the disciples, about Jewish people, they are the last people on the face of the earth to be open to the idea of human being God. They had a paradigm, you could say. They had a worldview. God is so otherworldly. God is so heavenly and holy that they couldn't even say the name of God out loud. But now, they are worshiping a man. How did all of this happen? It did not happen after generations and generations have passed, and the story got shifted along the way, and this entire thing becomes a legend or folklore, like, you know, how Guan Yu or Ji Gong or Ma Zhu becomes deified, becomes a deity in our Chinese mythology. Something must have happened, something drastic happened that must have, you know, shattered their paradigm, shattered their worldview. And you know what it was? It was a historic fact. They saw the resurrected Christ and it shattered their worldview. And that is how the early church grew and established, with the resurrection as the cornerstone of their faith. Sometimes I feel that we should be more sympathetic to our non-believer friends. Why is that? The resurrection makes Christianity the most irritating religion in the face of the earth, because it is right there in your face and it confronts your worldview. During my university days, when I was still a non-believer, after reading about the evidences for the resurrection by really good scholars like William Lane Craig, J.P. Morland, Josh McDowell, I have to seriously sit down and think about the implication of all of this. If Jesus is really raised from the dead, then I cannot just brush him off like any religious teacher or founder. He has said some stuff that I find quite irritating, including his claim as God and the only way to heaven. But more than anything, for most young people, what Jesus says about sex is most irritating. You see, how do people nowadays decide what they want to believe and what they don't want to believe? It is like Facebook. It is all about like and dislike. I like this, I don't like this. I like this, I don't like this. But now that I know that Jesus is real and that the resurrection is real, that means I have to take everything that Jesus says seriously, irrespective of how offended I am by his statements. And this takes me to my second point. The resurrection is the full vindication of Jesus' claims. The resurrection is the full vindication of Jesus' claims. Have you noticed that the very existence of Christianity hinges on the reality of Jesus' resurrection? Through this, he is justified from all condemnations, vindicated from all the wrong verdicts pronounced on him. First of all, the resurrection proves that Jesus is who he claimed to be. What did Jesus claim to be? Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. He claimed to be the promised one, the anointed one, the king who would deliver his people from sins. He claimed to have a unique relationship with God. He claimed to be divine. In short, he claimed to be God. Now, if Jesus had stayed dead in the tomb, it would be foolish for anyone to believe this claim. But since he rose from the grave, it would be foolish not to believe in it. A lot of people try to make Jesus a good teacher, but a good teacher would never say that. I could be going out there teaching Bible and people would say, you know, Jeremy is a pretty good Bible teacher, but if I started calling myself as God, if I started saying that I'm the second coming of Christ, you would not call me a good teacher anymore. Jesus was either who he said he was, or he was the biggest liar or the biggest xiaolang that has ever lived in this world. He said, I am God. He made some claims and then he said, what I am going to do is to validate who I am. One day, Jesus was clearing the business people, the money changers out of the temple, because they had turned this entire temple into like Qi Zhong Gai, right? So he went in there and then he drove all of them out. And then they said, what right do you have to do this? And he said, because I am God. Then they said, prove it. And he said, I will. After you kill me, I am going to come back to life 3 days later. And the other controversial thing that he has said is this: I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can get to God the Father except through me. We have all heard about this claim, and it is a pretty strong and radical claim. He said, I am the way. He didn't say, I am one way, I am a good way, I am one of the ways. Saying that all roads lead to heaven is silly, because that is like saying I can dial any number and get home. There's only one number that will get me home. Jesus says that the only way that can get you home is the way through me. Eastern religious teachers and philosophers say that there are many ways. So who is right? Because both of these are contradictory statements. One says, Jesus says there's only one way, and the other party says there are many ways. So who is right? Well, think about it. Jesus is the only religious leader who has risen from the dead. All other religious leaders and teachers and founders are still in their tombs. So who would you believe? Secondly, it also means that Jesus has the power to accomplish what he promises to do. What he promised to do in Matthew chapter 16, you know, in a few sermons back then when I was preaching about no cross, no crown, I talk about in Matthew 16, Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. He said that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and then he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. The cross and the empty tomb, it was no surprise to God. It was all part of God's plan. The Roman soldier made sure that Jesus was dead. You know, they stabbed him, they put him on the cross before he was put in the tomb. And then they sealed the tomb with a big stone, and then they posted guards to be there 24 hours. But they were only trying to stop the inevitable. When the angel met with the two Marys, the angel said, "Don't be afraid. I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said he would." The emphasis here is that phrase, "just as he said." He did what he promised. When God makes a promise, you can count on it. That is what it means. The resurrection is an earth-shattering historical event that proves that Jesus is who he said he was, and it shows that he has the power to accomplish what he promises to do. So what? Now come the second part of the sermon, because I want to dive into this question. So what? Why does the resurrection matter? What difference does it make? We are talking about news and information that we can use. So what does it mean for us who live in PJ, KL, in Malaysia? Three things. Number one, it means that your past can be forgiven. Number two, it means that your present problems can be managed. And number three, it means that your future can be certain. Firstly, your past can be forgiven. Can you turn to someone beside you and say that your past can be forgiven? Have you ever been halfway through a project and you wish you could start over? A few weeks ago, I was cooking for dinner for two, my wife and I, and I was trying out a new technique by trying to add baking soda into my tomato pasta sauce to neutralize the acidity. But then, I didn't know that only a tiny bit was enough, so I added a handful. So when I tasted the sauce, it was bitter. Yet, we pressed onward to finish the food. All right, don't want to finish the food. But, oh boy, how I wish I could redo the sauce. A lot of times I feel that people, you know, feel that way about their life. They get halfway through their life and they just wish that they could restart. We all have things that we have said and done that we, regretted. We all have regrets. We all feel bad about things. We all have guilt. A fellow pastor shared that he received an email from a member. Let me paraphrase that email. It goes like this. "I am 31 years old and divorced. Though I fought the divorce bitterly, I feel lost and I have no hope for my future. Often I go home and I cry, but there is no one holding me when I cry. Nobody cares. Nothing changes and I continue to fail. I am stressed out emotionally and I feel that I am on the verge of a collapse. Something is very wrong. But I feel so hurt and bitter that I can scarcely reach out to anyone or to relate to anyone. I feel as if my whole life is falling apart. The tragedy is we all know people who are like that. They cannot get on with the present and the future because they are stuck in their past. Some guilt or some regret has tied them down. Colossians chapter 2, 14 is the good news. God has forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with his legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. This is God's pardon program. He says he nailed it all to the cross. Jesus has paid for my sin on the cross, and his resurrection proves that his mission to conquer sin is successful. This means I don't have to pay for it anymore. Jesus was nailed to the cross so that I can quit nailing myself on the cross. He wants to forgive your past. He said he wants to cancel every record of debt you owe. Emotional debts, relational debts, every sin cancelled. Because Jesus is who he said he was, my past can be forgiven. I don't have to go around carrying a load of guilt. It is unnecessary. This reminds me of a childhood toy, you know, those magnetic drawing board. This is the time before iPad. So you make a mistake, you swipe it, you press a button, then you start with a clean slate. God wants to give you a chance to start afresh. You can walk out of here today knowing that every single thing that you have ever done wrong up until this point will be completely forgiven when you accept Jesus. That is good news. That is news that you and I can use. He wants to change you. He wants to help you and to give you a new beginning with a clear conscience. Number two, your present problems can be managed. Turn to someone and say that your present problems can be managed. Thank you for being cooperative. Much of life is unmanageable. Most of the things that happen to you, you have no control over them. Think of COVID. Think of the loss of a job. Think of the loss of a loved one. Maturity is when you figure out that you cannot have it all figured out. Maturity is when you realize that you cannot control all the things that life is going to throw at you. But God can, and that is good news. I cannot control everything in my life, but God can. And so I want to be connected to God and let Him control and ask Him for help. I often hear people say things like, my life is out of control. And it comes in different expressions and in different contexts. I feel powerless to change the situation. I feel powerless to break a bad habit. I feel powerless to save a relationship. I feel powerless to get out of debt. Friends, what you need is a power greater than yourself. You were never meant to live this life just on your own strength and power. God wants to fill you with His power. Paul prays for the believers in Ephesians chapter 1, verse 19. He says this. He prays that you will understand the incredible greatness of God's power for us who believe Him, believe Jesus. This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead. The same power that enabled Jesus to rise from death will help you to rise above your problems. The same power that God used at resurrection time 2,000 years ago can be used in your life right now. You don't know what the future holds. I don't either. But it doesn't matter, because even though the future is out of my control, it is not out of God's hand. He will give me the power to face it. No problem is too big for God. No situation is hopeless if you will turn it over to Him. So why does the resurrection matter to you? Because it means that your past can be forgiven. It means that your present problem can be managed. And finally, it means that your future can be certain. So once again, turn to someone beside you and say, your future can be certain. One of the universal problems that we have all got is death. Everybody dies. I am going to die someday, and so are you. Epicurus, one of the really famous Greek philosophers, believed that when you die, that's it, that's the end. Poof, you are gone. And because there is no sensation, there is nothing to be afraid about. And then there are the Stoics, right? They are like most Eastern philosophers, and they say that when you die, you continue to exist, but not as your personal self. You merge and you become one with the universe. It is like a drop of water going back to the ocean, that kind of thing. And so, don't be afraid. Some say that it is like a circle of life. You know, Lion King, you decompose, you become part of the fertilizer, and out of that plant, and out of that fertilizer comes plants that other living things would eat. So you become part of the world, one with the impersonal force. And so there is nothing to be afraid about. I have always wondered, isn't there something more than this? More than this uncertain and impersonal future? You see, the deepest desire of the human heart is that we want to be known and to be loved. We want to be loved. We want to be if we want to be with our loved ones, and the one thing we do not want is to lose our loved ones. This is not something that requires special revelation from God or from Holy Spirit. It is common knowledge. Most people know deep down that the thing that gives meaning to life is love. And you are going to tell me that when you die, all of these things is going to be stripped away from you, and somehow this is meant to give you some sort of closure and consolation. Death takes away your loved ones, and eventually it takes you away from all of your loved ones. And you are saying that there is nothing to be afraid about. When non-believers, they tell me that they are okay with the finality of death, whether they stop existing, or that they exist but without a personality, or they are cool with death, or they are fine with it, they are not afraid of it, I might nod my head and smile and say, oh, really, tell me more about it. But in my mind, I'm actually saying, I don't believe you. Perhaps some people might get too busy to reflect, to stop and reflect and think about their mortality, about death. But there is no denying that all of us have a deep internal longing to want to know what is going to happen afterward. It is here that Jesus Christ shows up and says, I am the resurrection and the life. Your future is secure with me. It is certain with me. The resurrection gives us hope beyond grave. But more than that, it is not a future where we lose our personality. We will remain as who we are, but with a slight twist. Because when we are raised with Jesus, we will have the glorified, resurrected bodies, which the Bible tells us that will be imperishable, honorable, and powerful. So not only is your future secure and personal, it is also unimaginably wonderful. Let me just explain that a little bit. There is a very famous poem entitled The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. It is a very strange poem. It is a man who is heartbroken because he has broken up with a girl, a woman named Lenore. And this raven comes in and sits beside him. And this raven keeps on saying one word over and over again. That word is nevermore. He asked the raven if he would see the girl again. Nevermore, the raven replied. Thinking that the raven is a messenger of the dead, he asked if he would see the girl in their next life. Nevermore. So after a series of questions and receiving the same reply, the narrator finally resigns to his fate, and he decides that he will be happy, or his spirit will be lifted, nevermore. What is the raven? It is a symbol of the narrator's unending grief and sorrow. It is a poem that depicts the frightening fragility and the irreversibility of life. When things are gone, they are gone forever. You cannot have them back. When you get old, your youth is gone forever. Your beauty is gone forever. When people die, it is irreversible. When I was growing up in Penang, my grandfather was a hawker selling char kway kak at Goh Tiao Lo, or street number 5. So almost every weekend, I would visit the store and eat char kway kak. Then I would walk over to the comic shop, borrow some comics, then walk over to my grandparents' place to read. But now, all of that is gone. My grandpa has died. The char kway kak is gone, the comic shop is gone, and the house is no longer there. Whenever I drive past that place, Goh Tiao Lo, there's a sense of loss. And in some ways, this is sort of like a death in the midst of life. As kids grow older, they talk about the loss of innocence or the loss of that childhood joy. As we grow older, we lose more of it. Some become joyless, some become lifeless, some become cynical and bitter, because these losses, they just suck the life and the joy out of you. But do you realize what the resurrection is? Religions can only promise you a kind of vague, uncertain spiritual future, spiritual bliss, maybe a pat on your back, a consolation of what you have lost. Try harder in your next life, they say. But the resurrection is the complete restoration of what you have lost. You don't just get your body back, you get the body you always wanted but never had. You don't just get your life back, you get the life that you always wanted but never had. You know, I know that there are people in the Christian circle, because they are faithful, because they have said, I am not going to marry somebody unless that person can be a spiritual partner to me. Because they are faithful to God in that way, perhaps they will not get married. So what should they say? I will never have that joy of, you know, having a life partner. I will never have that. I am too old now, and nobody is going to marry me now. I have lost that, and it is gone. But you know what the resurrection is? Jesus Christ is walking proof that you will miss nothing. Because there is going to be a heavenly wedding feast. And this feast will have the best of meats and the finest of wines. Isaiah 25. And it will be your wedding feast, one that is thrown by God, by Jesus for you. And what about those who have been sort of locked in a bad marriage or family and you are trying to keep it together? And you are probably never going to have that experience. You see other people walking around, you know, they have great family, they have great marriage. And you say, I guess I'm just never going to have that. My opportunity is gone forever. No. The resurrection means that you are not going to miss anything, nothing at all. It is all coming together in the future. The best is yet to come. The King, the Anointed One, the Messiah, He is going to have a banquet in heaven for you. And He is going to come here and invite you, and He is going to bring you there. Your future in Christ is certain, it is secure, it is personal, and it is going to be unimaginably wonderful. No religion, no faith system, no philosophy, no one has ever offered that kind of possible, that kind of future. There is no more powerful message than this. This is exciting news that we can use. And it is based on the historic fact of the resurrection. If you have invited your non-Christian friends to watch today's online service, you really have to ask them, why wouldn't you want all of this? Why wouldn't you want all of these things? Even if you don't like something that Jesus has said, or you don't understand certain things that He has taught, surely you would want to have all of this. Want to have all of your sin, everything that you have done wrong, completely forgiven. Two, to acquire a new power that will help you to manage the problems in your present. And three, to have a future that is certain, that is personal, secure, and unimaginably wonderful. That is the difference that Easter can make in your life today. However, just knowing why Easter happened, why Christ rose from the dead, and what a difference it made is not enough. You have got to do something about it. You have got to take some action steps. The gift has been, put in front of you. By grace, by faith, you have to pick it up. You have got to accept it by faith to pray and say to God, Jesus Christ, I want to trust you. I want to follow you. I want to get to know you. I want to give my life over to you and start a relationship with you. And only then, that is how Easter can make a difference in your life. You know, as the music team comes and ministers to us with this beautiful song called Creation Awaits, I pray that you would take this step of faith today and give your life to Jesus. You know, if you decide to give your life to Him, just type in the chat box, I give my life to Jesus, so that together we can celebrate with you. Now may I invite the music team to minister to us.
I am alive, saved by your sacrifice. Death overcome, glory dispels the night. You call the lifeless to children, we are adopted.
Some of you came because it is the Easter thing to do. It is Easter, it is tradition. Go to a church, so you came out of habit. Others of you, maybe because a friend invited you, someone who really cares about you. Someone who, you know, wants to see you also be added into this spiritual family. Some of you came because you saw the flyer on social media and you are curious. It doesn't matter why you think you came here. You are not here by accident. I think God has brought you here. I think He brought you here so that He could communicate with you. And I think that this is what He wants to say to you. You matter to me. I understand everything about your life. I know you. I made you. Remember? You matter to me. And I want to have a relationship with you. I sent my son to die for you. I want you to get to know me. Your background may be Buddhist, Catholic, Protestant, Hindu. You might be a Mormon. You might be a Taoist. Perhaps even an atheist. But I don't care what your background is, because I'm not talking about religion, and I'm talking about a relationship with Jesus today. This is what Easter is all about. God knows you. He wants you to know Him. So come with an open heart and say, God, here I am. Some of you are not sure whether you have a relationship with Jesus or whether you go to heaven if you died. Would you pray with me in your heart? Jesus Christ, I am not sure if I am safe or not. If I am not, I am asking you to save me today. I am putting my total trust in you and I want to follow you. Thank you for loving me and dying for my sins on the cross. If you have said that simple prayer in your heart, let us celebrate with you by writing in the chat box, I give my life to Jesus today. Some of you have been close to God in the past. You have kind of drifted away. God wants you to come back. What does God say to somebody who has drifted away? Isaiah chapter 54, verse 7. With deep love, I will welcome you back. Nobody will love you as much as Jesus did, as Jesus does. You matter to Him. And He has brought you here today to tell you that He died for you to prove how much He loves you. Would you say to Him, Jesus Christ, I am coming home tonight. I want to quit playing church and be serious with my faith and with you. Some of you are still church hopping. You have not found a church that you could call home. Perhaps you just moved to Klang Valley. PJEFC would love to be your spiritual family. We welcome you here. This is a place for imperfect people like me. Our purpose is to love God together, is to love people together, and together we will make disciples. We want to walk together with you. Some are barely hanging on, and you have been discouraged, depressed, and despondent in the past months. The pressure and the stress has been building up.